Hello, Beth Martins here. Welcome to this King Heroes Journey podcast. I have the immense pleasure today of hosting Jason Goodman. I'm a new fan of Jason's. Before I get started and introduce himself, I'm going to pause this other thing that's going on. That always happens. All right. And so if you're new to the King Heroes Journey podcast or you're hearing this recording later, I just want you to know that this was inspired by a few different things. One was going through the passing of my father in my life, representing the strong masculine. It brought me to a place of very deep inquiry and deep healing around this. And suddenly I felt like I could both work for men and especially highlight those strong king heroes that are out in the community. They are often saying the thing that people don't want to hear and yet willing to withstand the attacks, the takedowns. And I know, Jason, you're very familiar with that, so we'll talk about that. The hope is that we're going to draw the king heroes out of the woodwork because they've gone a little bit down, right? Men have been, beaten in a lot of ways. And whether it's on the hormonal level or the toxicity or the, you know, emotional takedowns and calling men toxic in general, whatever has done it to these men, it's something that needs to come to light. We need to know about it and we need to support the strong king heroes out there. So Jason, thank you so much for joining me. It's really a pleasure. I've got to know you through your channel a little bit now through Ole Damegard as well. You hosted me last Monday. I will be on your show again this Monday. Yay, as far as I know. Anyway, and so Jason is an intrepid alternative journalist. He's out there and broadcasting every single day. I see several notifications come in sometimes on one day. You're tireless. Jason, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Beth. And I'm a new fan of yours as well. Ole introduced us. I think it was a great show on Monday. And, you know, this this idea of speaking unpopular truth, I'm just sort of a guy who, even as a little kid, I had my own ideas. And if I thought it was a good idea, I didn't really care too much if somebody else thought it wasn't a good idea, because frequently what I find is happening is that I'm having these ideas that are maybe beyond the ability of the person who's telling me it's a bad idea to comprehend, whether it's in my filmmaking or in how I run Crowdsource the Truth now. I always seem to march to the beat of my own drummer. My filmmaking career, I was focused on stereoscopic 3D. And I mean, looking back now, that might not seem so innovative, but before Avatar, the movie came out, nobody was doing that. You couldn't go out to the movies and see a 3D movie. So people looked at me like I was crazy when I said I wanted to start a 3D movie production company, but I did it. And I just saw this clear path to the end as far as how to do it. And it was so clear in my mind and so much for me the right thing to do that I never had any doubt in myself. So whatever anybody else said, who the hell cares what you think, was kind of my attitude. And maybe that's from growing up in New York, where this is a big city with a lot of people around. And I think a lot of people have, our perceptions of New York have changed quite a lot since I was a little kid, in part because of these major events that we've had, 9/11, and now this coronavirus pandemic. I think that New York is kind of like the toughest guy in the bar, right? Somebody who's got something to prove walks right up to him and punches him in the nose. And if you can knock down New York, everyone's like, whoa, don't mess with that guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got to be, I don't want to say that you have to be tough to live in New York, because I don't want to spread the misconception that New York is mean. New York and people from New York, in my experience, are usually exceptionally nice. It's people that come from outside New York who think they have to be mean to coexist in New York. And I find there's a big difference between being assertive and stern and just being mean. You can be the nicest person in the world, and if someone's doing something wrong, you need to be very assertive and you need to state yourself sternly so that there's no misunderstanding, but it's not necessarily mean. So I think having confidence in myself and standing up to some of the people that like to pipe up and tell you their opinion when it's not wanted or helpful or necessary is a big part of doing what you're describing, Beth. And, you know, when I decided to leave the world of 3D, you know, the movie production industry is in a disaster now. And in 2013, 3D had a major decline. So I didn't want to be one of these also-ran people who was just doing what everybody else in Hollywood was doing. To me, 3D was unique, and I developed, you know, what I think was an exceptional skill at doing it. So that was my art form, and then going and doing something else didn't seem like the right solution to me. I've basically abandoned 3D. I feel like I've done what I need to do with it for now. Maybe I'll come back to it at some point in the future, but it no longer interests me. And certainly making movies in 2D just for somebody else to pay me to make a movie didn't interest me at all. So what I chose to do was to take my filmmaking skills and capabilities and my technical knowledge and to apply it to something else that interested me, which was the utter failure of journalism. And when you introduced me as a journalist, I think that's accurate, but I don't often refer to myself as a journalist, and I don't really think of myself as a journalist. I think of myself more as a documentary filmmaker and kind of a new breed of that. When I look at journalism and the state of journalism, at least in the United States and frankly around the world right now, for the most part, it is so decrepit and so not what anybody expects or needs from it that I don't even want to lump myself into, you know, if Anderson Cooper, if Chris Cuomo, if Rachel Maddow, anybody working at the New York Times, they're journalists. I don't want to be that. I want to be something else. I'm a guy walking around with a camera, observing what's going on with the businesses around New York, the hospitals, the hospital workers, the barbershop owners, the hardware store owners, the cops, the criminals, the average person on the street. I'm just going around. I don't edit my shows. I don't take little sound bites and try to cause people to think that this statement over here is a piece of evidence of something over here. For the most part, I'm just walking around looking at stuff when I'm doing my documentation of what's going on the street. And when it comes to interviewing people, again, I find out what intrigues me about a particular person. And usually when I invite somebody on for an interview, it's because I have questions that I want to ask them. And in getting to the answers of those questions, I think people are finding that I'm just producing some very interesting interviews because I'm not trying to, I mean, someone will doubt this if I say this, I'm not trying to consciously drive an agenda. Obviously, I would like for New York City to return to its former state of prosperous business where it's safe to walk around the streets and you can go to restaurants and socialize with people. So from that standpoint, yes, I have an agenda. I would like peace, harmony, commerce, and I'd like the United States to be the best version of itself. I don't think that the modern United States was absolutely perfect. I despise the fact that there is this money-driven, imperialistic nature to the modern United States. I wish there was something I could personally do about that. But I think we sort of need to accept that we're here and we can either destroy the whole thing and start from scratch, or we can try to eliminate the parts of the thing that we don't like and focus on the parts that we like and nurture and help those grow. And that's what I'm hopefully trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. That's so good. Too bad the word journalist has been ruined now, right? Like that we kind of either need to reclaim it or come up with it. That's why I say alternative journalist.
And I have one more thing to say about it because, sure. You know, I've been sued by a number of people who I believe are social engineers. And by social engineer, I mean, they're people who are trying to convince people of something. You know, you could argue that I'm trying to change people's minds, but I'm not trying to do it through deception. If the New York Times tells us, hey, hospitals are overrun in New York City, and then I go to that very same hospital the next day, and there's a tenth of the number of people there, and I start asking people, what prompted you to come to this hospital today? Were they giving out free coronavirus tests or are you worried or whatever? And the cops say, go away, don't talk to these people. I'm just observing that and I'm reporting on that. And so, you know, people don't want me doing that. I'm not trying to convince people of anything that I made up. I'm just showing you what's there. Social engineers that I'm talking about, they like to manipulate facts and they like to manipulate evidence to cause people to believe something that is not true is true so that they can sway the decision-making process or convince someone of something that's really not honest. And so one of the arguments that they've used or that they did initially, I think it's becoming harder for them to make this argument as my journalistic acumen and experience increase. They said, oh, he's not even a journalist. which you cannot really say that, because unlike being a doctor or a lawyer or even an air conditioning repair person, you don't need any kind of license. You don't need any state certification. There's no stamp of approval that says you are a journalist. I can't just like open up a business and start doing surgery to people and tell them I'm a doctor. You go to jail for that and you're going to wind up hurting people. But being a journalist is a bit like being a photographer. I mean, are you a photographer, Beth? Is that your vocation? Is that your profession? It is. Okay. So with you, it is.
No, it's not actually. No.
Okay. Okay. But if you showed me a picture in your phone and I said, wow, that is a beautiful picture of the sunset, who was the photographer? And it might be you. And you'd say, I was the photographer. So in that sense, for that photo, you were the photographer. If you were walking down the street in Minneapolis and a cop started to choke out George Floyd and you took a picture of it and sent it to the news, photo credit would be for you. You'd be the photographer. So it's journalism is one of these things where the act of doing it makes you it. My grandmother was not a professional photographer, but she took photographs. And if you saw the photo, she's a photographer. So likewise, if you did a story, oh my God, I'm standing here outside Cup Foods and this cop just totally murdered a guy. You're the journalist, even if you're just that for 5 seconds. So I'm getting a bit sidetracked here, but these lawsuits that have come up against me, they are not legitimate efforts to cure an injury. You know, all of us go around in our lives getting into business relationships, personal relationships. You get into conflicts with people. And if they can't be resolved, sometimes there are lawsuits. I've been in a number of businesses. Rarely there have been lawsuits. And, you know, sometimes they're legitimate, sometimes they're not. These guys that are suing me, they've made these claims up. The lawsuits are not appreciated so far by the judges that have been presided over them. And I've been having to work really hard to fight them. I can't afford a lawyer, so I've had to become my own attorney. I've been watching bar exam videos and fighting these lawsuits to the best of my ability, but they just will not let up. They keep coming at me, and it's a term that exists, but I've been talking about a lot, is lawfare, the weaponization of the legal system. And I want to really have people understand what that word is and kind of roll it around in their brains and think about it for a second, because whether or not you agree with the politics or the policies, or even if you like or dislike somebody like General Michael Flynn, the fact is what they're doing to him is vastly different than what they're doing to someone like Andrew McCabe. Both individuals have been charged with lying to the FBI. 18 USC 1001 is the criminal charge for lying to the FBI. But yet, Andrew McCabe, they haven't even indicted him for that. They just said, well, he lacked candor when he spoke. With General Flynn, I mean, they're spending years. The guy's lost his house. He's having to pay attorneys. He's having to go back to court. His name has been smeared through the news. He can never go anywhere again for the rest of his life without people recognizing him. And a lot of people dislike him from the misinformation and the negative news that's been put out about him. So that's lawfare. And this guy, I mean, if he goes to jail for 5 years, that's a fair portion of the remainder of his life. He's got young grandchildren. He's got a family. They've really introduced a lot of misery into this guy's life. And it's just interesting to see that Andrew McCabe, Peter Strzok, James Comey, John Brennan, other guys who have lied in testimony, they don't have the same thing happening. So with me, it's a civil lawsuit. On a previous show with Ole Damegard, we spoke about how some of the people who have spoken out about certain public events, that if I even mention them here on YouTube, we could get in trouble. But they've been sued. And it's interesting to see some of the independent journalists, independent news people, social media figures who've been sued for saying certain types of things. And a lot of the characters, including some of the lawyers and other people, they all seem to be connected to these things. They all seem to be suing similar people or defending similar people or connected in some way. It's very interesting. And it's something that I intend to look into much further when these lawsuits, another part of it is I can't talk about it, or it comes up in the suit and it could upset the judge and disrupt the outcome of the case.
Totally. Good. Well, that's good to know. Hey, I just want to shout out to everybody in the chat that's so active right now. Nachiketa, Kelly F. E. Sue Finelli, D-I-T-R-H, David Weiss, who I think maybe you might know. He wants to flat smack you, by the way.
Who wants to flat smack me?
David Weiss.
Why does he want to do that?
Do you know what flat smack is?
Oh, flat earth. Right. Oh, I know David Weiss, of course. Flat smack me. Got it.
Yeah. He's in your Patreon, he says.
Yes. And I don't know. Flat earth.
Oh, don't worry. We won't take the time. I know you're short. That was just on the fly. But hello, everyone. I'm so glad you could make it for this live. Really great to have you. And the time is slightly short today, so we're going to get on.
I apologize.
No problem at all. What I would love to know is, you know, how do you find the courage to do this, to go up against the dark lords, those big giants? I mean, they're coming after you, obviously, but you're standing up to it. You keep on doing what you're doing. You're taking it and rolling with the punches. Where do you find the courage, and how do you get past the stress of the whole thing?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. I can't say that I know where I find the courage. I just, I've never liked bullies. When I was a little kid in grade school, there was this one kid who was like a lot taller than everybody, one of the older kids, who was the tallest kid on the bus in the neighborhood. And he had his friends, and him and his friends used to bully me and my friends. And I remember one day they smacked a girl on the back of the head or something like that. And then it was just building to this point where one day the big guy wasn't on the bus, and his second in command was taking over the bullying that day. And I just stood up and punched the guy in the nose, and he ran off the bus crying and went home, and I had made a fool of him and sort of sent a message to the rest of them, and the bullying stopped.
Wow. Good for you.
And yeah, I mean, I'm not encouraging violence, and I don't like violence. I don't like getting into fights, but I also don't like being pushed around. So I've had to sort of, I don't like starting fights, but I'm getting better at finishing them. And so I want people who would choose to pick on me and my associates and my friends to recognize that if they want to do that, they're going to meet resistance, and it could wind up with a negative outcome for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. There's a certain portion of the people that are willing to get into conflict that they see it's worth it. And from the outside, it looks like you're definitely a rebel with a cause. You're fighting, knowing full well while you're doing it. The problem that can happen is people don't have a clue what their purpose is, and they fight in every direction. And they're really not only not getting the effect that they want to be getting, but they're a nemesis.
Yeah. I see that in the streets. You know, we see all these people who are sort of disenfranchised and angry. And I mean, I understand that, but who in their teens, 20s, doesn't feel that way, doesn't feel like they're not getting what they want from the world, from their career, from their parents, from their friends, from their boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. There's a lot of frustration in life. And as you grow up and realize that things aren't always going to go your way. And see, this is interesting. A lot of the people that we're seeing in these protests, this civil unrest, even in the riots, a lot of them are college students who are white, and they're protesting under the banner of Black Lives Matter. Well, look, of course, Black Lives Matter. I don't even want to say every life matters, because that is somehow now seen as a negative comment about the statement that Black Lives Matter. But the political movement, the charity, whatever it is, the entity Black Lives Matter is somewhat of a psychological trick, in that it's named a phrase that no reasonable person could argue with. So therefore, if there's anything about the organization that you disagree with, like they say, hey, we like Marxism and we want to burn down capitalism and destroy the system, it's like, well, I can agree that Black Lives Matter, but totally disagree with that whole other agenda. Mm-hmm. And it's just set up in such a way so that the people in the street, you cannot even get to this level of conversation with them, because it's binary. You're either for Black Lives Matter or you're against Black Lives Matter, and there's no nuance whatsoever. And so they've kind of got all these disenfranchised and angry people, most who I observe are not even Black, who are behind this movement and who want to destroy the police, because somehow they think the police are creating every problem for Black people and for whoever, and creating this, you know, systemic racism. And there was some other term, I forget what the term is, but I don't agree that we have this, you know, that the United States is a totally racist place. I do believe we spent 8 years with a Black president, or at least a 50% Black president. And that sort of says to me that Black people can ascend to positions of power and notoriety in the United States. And I just really think that it's mostly a matter of most things in life are sort of, you know, what you make of them. I'm the guy who videos empty hospitals. That's right, Blue Pill. Thank you for sharing those hospital videos. I mean, all I'm trying to do, I didn't know those hospitals were going to be empty. I just walked over there and noticed they had all their ambulances parked there. I was having a conversation with the EMT, and I was thinking to myself, how do they have EMTs who can stand here and talk to me for 5 and 10 minutes at a time if there's a pandemic going on inside there? You would think that people, there'd be certain signs of urgency. I would imagine if there were no ambulances, and while I was standing there for 10 minutes, an ambulance pulled up and somebody rushed inside, that might be more of an organic sign of a pandemic than a guy standing around like hanging up hoses and sort of looking like he's just cleaning up the garage. But I saw that all over the city. Doctors hanging out on the sidewalk, stopping and having conversations with me. The FDNY ambulance depot stocked up with 5, 10, 12 ambulances every time I went there. And then after I sort of became known, like here we just had someone in the chat who knew me from doing that, hundreds of thousands of people have seen those videos. So as the days went on, there are people who watch my videos who say they heard ambulance drivers, EMTs saying to each other, oh, that's the guy, don't talk to him. So like I became known as exposing this. Now, I didn't have an agenda. I didn't say, oh, I think something's going on, I'm going to go expose it. But it's interesting that in New York City now, there's been all this federal money that months ago, Andrew Cuomo said, oh, the federal government is doing a great job and sending us money. And then now he says, no, President Trump is responsible for all these deaths from coronavirus. How can he say that? I mean, even if you hate Donald Trump, is Donald Trump going around giving people coronavirus? I mean, how is he responsible for coronavirus? When I see what Andrew Cuomo did in New York City, they turned the Javits Center into a hospital that served, I think, less than 200 people. They brought a giant Navy boat that was supposed to be for everybody who doesn't have coronavirus, and then they put a coronavirus person on there, contaminated the whole boat, and made it also for coronavirus. I think that serviced less than 100 patients and then left. How much money was wasted in doing that? And I'm not trying to say money is equivalent to lives. I'm trying to say money is a resource. And if we're trying to use our resources to save people's lives, wasting resources is killing people. So Andrew Cuomo, I mean, this is all the politics of this thing. And so I have never said that coronavirus is a hoax. And I don't like to say that because it's so imprecise. I think there's definitely aspects to this entire thing that are not well understood by the people in charge, at least. I think there are people getting sick and dying, but I think it's complicated. This is complicated medical stuff. And when we mix politics with it, like this happened a lot in my interview with Dershowitz, he's mixing law with medical science. And he's saying, if a vaccine is invented, they're talking about releasing a vaccine in November. And Dershowitz is saying, oh, that the Constitution empowers the government to force you to take this vaccine if it is legally determined that it's for the good, the collective good or whatever. So that's a complicated thing in and of itself, because just making a vaccine, I mean, I could dump mud in a glass and tell you it's a cocktail. That doesn't mean it's going to taste good. Just saying something is a vaccine, I don't agree that the government now has the right to vote that you have to be injected with to protect other people, because they don't seem to even understand what's going on with the virus. They're changing the rule every day. I've gotten a little bit off track from where we started, but I mean, you know, I'm just kind of freewheeling here.
That's good. No, it's all good, because it gives people a sense of what your work is really comprised of. And you know, sorry to keep using the word, but it's intensive journalism. You're going in without a sense of what you're going to find. You're not, oh, I'm going to go and get some dirt on those guys. You're just, I just want to go see what's actually happening.
Right.
And then you report it clearly. So
Oh, sorry. You asked me where I get the courage. So with this journey into crowdsource the truth, I mean, when I created my 3D company, that was going against the grain, which many people would say, well, why did you do that? You could have just been making corporate videos and have a company that would still be in business now. But I didn't like that. I just felt like this was the right thing to do. I felt passionate about it and I really wanted to do it. And when it came to starting crowdsource the truth, I didn't say, ooh, I think it would be a great way to make money by putting controversial videos on YouTube that will make me this sort of semi-public figure who's the focus of controversy and hatred and animosity and anti-Jewish sentiment simply because of my heritage and being demonetized and sued. I did not do that. I think there's a lot of ways that I could have made money with these skills, maybe offering live streaming services to corporations and things like that. But I was looking at the state of journalism at the time, and I had just had knee surgery. So I was kind of homebound and doing a lot of exercises to rehabilitate my knee and watching a lot of YouTube and just learning about how alternative journalism was developing on YouTube, looking at different alternative journalists. And this was right around 2016 when the election was starting. And I originally wanted Bernie Sanders. You know, I knew a lot about the Clintons and the inappropriate uses of the Clinton Foundation, that it was never properly organized, that it has 501c3 status only as a presidential library in Arkansas, and all of these other charitable functions they do are outside of their legal status. And most people think, well, but they're helping people, except we don't know that they're helping people. We know that they're breaking the law to not pay taxes. And when we start to look at some of the actual things that they do, they seem to be not helping people. So, you know, a lot of people were just sort of taking information, whether it comes from the news or social media, because everybody blames the mainstream news. And absolutely, they are guilty. The mainstream news is a social engineering operation funded by multi-billion dollar corporations that either want you to buy their products or they're pushing some other agenda that also earns them money, perhaps indirectly. So I felt that it was important to separate this corporate ownership of the news, corporate sponsorship of the news, and this corporate-driven agenda that the mainstream news has. Now, that's not where social engineering ends. So, I mean, like anything, when I set out to do this, I don't think I really had any idea what I was in store, you know, what was in store for me. But I've learned a lot on the way. I've never heard the term social engineering when I started doing this. And I mean, obviously I'm familiar with people trying to lie, to deceive you, to get you to do something. But I just was looking at the state of the country, and when Bernie Sanders, who I no longer support and now understand much better than I did at the time that I liked him, I just liked him because he was sort of talking about ending wars and fighting these big corporations and stuff like that. I'm not anti-capitalism. I'm anti-corporate cronyism, and I'm anti-corruption, and I'm anti, you know, manipulating the law to build your monopoly and consolidate your power. I think capitalism is important, but it should be regulated by the government. We should have a government with police and laws and all that sort of stuff to prevent individuals like Bill Gates, like Jeff Bezos. I don't think you should be able to own all the online retail and brick and mortar stores. I would prefer for Whole Foods to be independent of Amazon.com. I would prefer for Amazon.com to not be able to make investments in the post office or put pressure on other companies that are trying to deliver things that can't match their low prices for delivery. I talked to friends who had retail stores that sell things on Amazon.com that have been crushed by Amazon.com. So I'm not on board with this Marxist agenda of redistributing the wealth. I feel like that suppresses ingenuity, and it suppresses the entrepreneurial spirit of somebody like me. Somewhere right now, there's a five-year-old version of me who, you know, when I was a kid, when I was done reading a comic book, I would bring it to school and I would sell comic books to my friends for, you know, buy more comic books. And it was like, hey, they got to comic books for less money, I got to buy more comic books. Kind of a good system, in my opinion. But if I became the monopoly king of comic books and decided all comic books were $20, I don't support that, obviously. So I just was looking at a system that was going to fail, and I felt I had to do this, or that was it.
I got it. I'd like to back up to something that you said, because this is so relevant.
Yeah.
In that, if you had known what kind of trials and tribulations you're going to be going through, it might have been kind of a different choice. And this is something that I feel is absolutely endemic when it comes to sacred purpose. Now I want to ask you about, does this feel like it's your sacred purpose? Because if any of us knew what we were in for, we would never do it.
Right.
If I had to look back, or you know, look forward and go, oh, I'm going to go through stage four lymphoma and 3 years of treatments and near death, and you know, never mind all. It's not like the challenges stopped there.
Yeah.
So, do you connect with this as your sacred purpose? Is it something you feel you're called to do from God or beyond or wherever you?
I don't know that I think about things in that sense. I thought you were going to ask me if I knew what the challenges would be if I would not have done it. And no, the answer is no. I would have still done it. There's nothing happening right now that makes me say, oh, I wish I hadn't done this. Mm-hmm. I don't like second guessing myself. I mean, there are a number of things in my life that I look back on and say, you know, I regret how that turned out. And if I could go in a time machine back to this moment and make this decision instead of that decision. But then I think about it and I say, well, you know, if I had done that, this or that wouldn't have happened. So I don't ever really think like that. I don't like to second guess myself. Another characteristic is that I'm pretty decisive. Like when pressure is on and things are happening. I mean, I know this might sound silly to some people, but in the film industry, there's some similarities to military operations in that the stakes are much lower, obviously. Usually people's lives aren't on the line and things like that. But we've got an objective. We've got a time frame in which to execute it. And if you miss the opportunity, it could be gone forever and you will fail. And failure could mean you're done in this industry. You're never going to work again. You're a client, you know, could mean a lot of different things. So, you know, the sun is going down. We only have one day with this actor. We only have one day in this location, whatever it might be. Now we have to do it. And oh no, the camera's not working. Your complicated 3D device isn't working. You need to get in there. You need to make your decisions and you need to solve it. Steven Spielberg is 12 minutes early and somebody just broke the focus, the follow focus. What do? You just, do we tell Steven Spielberg, can you wait 15 minutes? Or no, you can't do that. Now the internet will explode. But I've already spoken about the fact that I worked with Steven Spielberg for one day. He was very nice to me.
That's awesome. Oh, I'm glad to hear that. And so did it ever get so over the top for you, or does it ever get so over the top that you feel like it's a crash? That's the hallmark of the King Hero, is that they're putting out so much. Often, you know, it's going to be in their career. Of course, I haven't even asked you if you have a family or if you have children, or you don't. Okay. So
I'm at my mom and dad, and I have other members of my family I don't like to publicize, but no children, and I'm divorced. Yes.
Right. Well, it's good in a way, just so they can't hold that against you.
Exactly.
Because that is the frightening thing for parents out there speaking out. They're like, yeah, I can take it. I can, you know, I keep imagining, I'm driving down the street today and I'm going, if I die prematurely, you guys play this song. Like, why am I thinking like this? Right. Like that's kind of what I'm not wishing for that, but it's better not to be very naive also. It's totally unconscious, pushing that down. So was there a time when you fell down in this, when the Kings crash, there's so much weight on them? And how did you get to the other side?
You know what? When you ask me that question, I'm brought back to a moment in my office at 21st Century 3D. And there were occasions where we were doing jobs and doing productions that were maybe such a brass ring reach that it was almost like, how are we going to do this? And I'm remembering, you know, people know that I'm friends with Lee Stranahan, and I met Lee Stranahan 25 years ago or something like that, because I was doing this conference in New York City about 3D animation, and Lee and his brother Kenny are experts in 3D animation. So I remember the conference was the following day, and I was in the office preparing all the, you know, video that was going to play on screens when people walked in, and we had paid all this money to rent the place and the TVs. And this was the video that was going to be playing throughout the day of go to this conference with Lee Stranahan and this one with Ken Stranahan, this other guy, this other thing. And it just, the whole thing was failing. And it was like 4 or 5 in the morning and I hadn't slept and the conference was starting at 9 a.m. And I just was, I remember I was on the ground of the office pounding my fists on the ground and I was crying. I was brought to tears. And I just, you know, when that emotional no one else was in the office at the moment. And when that emotional outburst ended, I just got myself back together, figured out some way of some alternate approach of having the video get done. And I don't remember what the particular solution was to that problem, but the conference happened. People enjoyed it. It earned a small amount of money and I carried on. And I think that the majority of my crashes, like what you're talking about, have happened in those type of situations. You know, we were at another situation where we were in Dubai, 2014. I directed a film called Daydreams of Dubai. And I had told the producer, we're going to need, you know, a Winnebago with an air conditioner and all the equipment will be staged in there. And we'll, because it's going to be hot in May in the desert in Dubai. And we needed this air conditioned trailer. And she couldn't get it because Star Wars was shooting in Abu Dhabi. So all the air conditioned trailers had been rented. And we're just out in the desert working on all this equipment. And the cameras overheated, the laptops overheated, everything overheated. And the client was going crazy. And I just said, all right, go turn on the transpo van, the transportation van, get the air conditioner going. I gave one of the camera assistants the cameras to sit in the van until they cooled down. And then I went in there and we started them up and we let them run in the van for a few minutes. And then we took them outside. We made the shot and we left. And it's like, you know, crashing. What am I going to do? I'm going to cry and pound the floor in the office. That doesn't solve it.
You already tried that.
Yeah. So you got to just, if it's not a life and death situation, and even if it is, crying and running out of ideas and giving up is definitely not going to solve it. So for whatever reason, my brain just works that way. I just focus down on, look, what am I going to do here? I faced down an embarred attorney in federal court. And I think most people don't think, even lawyers, don't think that's something that you could or should do. And I'm not recommending that anybody else do it. But if I had done it the way they wanted me to do it, I definitely would have gone broke and I would have had a much different outcome.
Bravo. That's amazing. Congratulations on that. Yeah, so good. And actually, I really love that you're able to share the story because that's really what endears people is when, you know, and it's not to cry on the floor right now and weep in front of your people. It's more like, yeah, here's how I got past that moment. And really the overcoming, it's always so, it's so subtle. It's so humble. Yeah. It's just like, oh, keep going. Ah, okay, I'll keep going. Like, it's just, that's all it is, right?
Yeah. You know, another analogy that I think of often, so often, in fact, that certain people might be sick of hearing about it. But one of the things that I did, you know, before I had 21st century 3D, my company was focused on fixing computers. And I was good at that, but it was boring. I didn't really like that. I wasn't passionate about it. It was just a skill I had that I could monetize. And so there was kind of a lengthy period where I was transitioning my company from a computer fixing company into a production company. And one of the most important things I did that enabled that was I invented a 3D video camera. And to do that, I had to disassemble these Panasonic cameras. I disassembled Mac mini computers and I put them all back together into this functional 3D camera that I don't know how the hell I did that. It was just so far. I mean, I don't have any electronic engineering background. I hired an electronic engineer who developed a circuit that we integrated into the whole thing. But it was one of the most challenging things that I ever did. I had never even operated a soldering iron before I did that. And by the time I was done, I was precision soldering wires the thickness of a human hair onto surface mount components on a Panasonic, you know, printed circuit board. And we built 5 of these cameras and did 3D productions all around the world with them. So I look at that as an analogy for so many things in life, because when I spoke to these Panasonic engineers in New Jersey, there's a couple of Japanese Panasonic engineers who I knew and spoke to, and I spoke to an engineer at Apple Computer, they all said, that is not going to work. You can't desolder components from our 8-layer printed circuit board and put it back together with some product for some, it's not going to work. You're just going to destroy these cameras and lose your money and don't do that is basically what they said. Mm-hmm. And I just, in my head, I was like, I know this could be made to work. I don't know how I'm going to do that, but I'm not going to rest until it works. And that's what I did. And I think that when you face these insurmountable problems, I mean, look, I'm not going to say like somebody should try to swim to Mars. I don't think you can do that. But when there are practical things, like if someone said to themselves, I want to run for Congress, why can't you do that? A lot of people will tell you, you can't do that. You don't have the money, the notoriety, the experience, the whatever. But the right kind of person who figures out how to do that, I mean, I think anybody could do that. Anybody could do whatever they set their mind to it if they just don't give up and don't die.
Okay, you got it. Don't give up. Don't die. I know. I had to keep that one in mind myself. So good. I might have to try to have you on another time because we got a lot of questions. But the one I would love, like you just gave the advice I was going to ask for. So for King Heroes out there, what makes this all worth it for you? What at the end of the day is the reward?
I get so many emails from people who say that what I'm doing is giving them hope. I mean, I literally started out doing this thinking I need a job and I don't want to get a job doing something that I think is a waste of time or stupid. I want to do something that I believe in. And I believe that the news was not serving the purpose it was intended to serve. It was not giving people the information that they needed to get to the bottom of facts that Dick, look at what's happening around us now. Facts and information dictate everything in our life. And if you're being lied to by people, that's going to ruin your life. Or at least it's going to deprive you of the opportunity to make the decisions that you need to make to have whatever limited amount of control we have over our own lives. So I set out to do this. And I mean, the most rewarding aspect is that I'm able to keep doing it. I'm able to build a sustainable business. I've created this network that you're now part of, Beth. Thank you for doing that with your Patreon channel. And I'm not necessarily specifically promoting the company Patreon, but the fact that there exists Patreon.com and Subscribestar.com, these services that allow independent creators, people are putting out videos, putting out information, sharing their knowledge with people. It allows us as individuals to earn money without, like if you wanted to do a show sharing your experience in 1990, you'd have to go pitch it to HBO or ABC or CBS or Oxygen Network or whatever. And they'd say, well, you're too much this and that. You're not enough of this other thing. We have enough of this. We don't want that. We don't like this and that. Our opinion of you and your stuff is So whoever those gatekeepers are, for whatever reason, if they're paid by entities that want New York City to be destroyed, that want everybody to take vaccines, that want everybody to be fearful of a viral infection that a huge percentage of people with healthy immune systems will be able to overcome without some billions of dollars worth of pharmaceutical stuff, those people don't want you and I doing what we're doing. So I'm very pleased that I've enabled this network of people that includes you and Ole and people like David Hawkins and all the other co-hosts that I have on the sponsor exclusive segments on my show that are sponsored by the viewers. I've eliminated corporate sponsorship. I don't want to get hired by Fox News or, you know, name the news company. I don't want that. I don't want notoriety. I recognize that being on camera and putting out these videos, people are now knowing who I am, but I'm not doing this to be famous. To whatever extent people consider that I am that, that's my least favorite aspect of it. I just want the information to get out there, and I didn't want to spend 5 years raising money to start a news network to hire people to talk and people to run the cameras and people to edit the this and the that. I just figured, you know what? I can figure out a way to do this all myself, and I'll just invite guests on as you've done with me today, and thank you for that. And I'm like a one-man band news show. And the satisfaction that I get is knowing that people appreciate that, the people that I work with, their lives are being enriched by having their own ability to sustain this information and sustain the ability to put it out. And the people that watch the show are getting satisfaction and value and comfort and knowledge from the information that we're bringing forward.
Amen. Amen to that. Just for anyone who doesn't know, Jason, you have the most beautiful audience. I've heard from a lot of your people since we did the interview Monday.
Yeah.
And they're high quality. They're buying books. They're coming to my webinar.
That's great.
So thank you so much. Yeah, it's really amazing when you can feel when you hit that thread that connects. Like, that's what purpose is to me, that we have all our own individual tribes that we need to connect with, who can hear only from you what your truth is. Even they could hear the same information from someone else and it won't land. It's you and who you are that they need. So it's a beautiful thing. Would you please share how people can connect with you? I have put your YouTube channel below, but if you can share your Patreon link as well. I'm sorry, I didn't think of that.
No, that's okay. That's totally okay. Yeah, Jason Goodman is my main YouTube channel. My name leads people to the main YouTube channel, but these social engineers keep issuing strikes. They put every single kind of complaint under the sun on YouTube. They prompt other people to complain to YouTube. And so I can't live stream on the Jason Goodman channel right now. And that sounds like a petty complaint, but what it does, Beth, is it reduces my ability to broadcast this information out and to get to more people and to continue to grow the business and grow the ability to share information coming from people like yourself and others who try to come on the channel. They're trying to suppress what we're doing. So one of the best ways that people can help us do that is to, and I try to make it as inexpensive as possible, because I know a lot of people are having financial difficulty. I'm not saying I want somebody to come be a sponsor for $1 million or even $100. It's like a micro sponsorship program where for as little as $2 or $5 or $10, any amount that a person picks per month, they can sponsor the show at patreon.com/crowdsourcethetruth or subscribestar.com/crowdsourcethetruth. And it's like less than someone would pay for one copy of a newspaper. They can watch a month's worth of shows, and they know that there's no Exxon, no Pfizer, no pharmaceutical big oil, military contractor kind of company coming in there and saying, oh, Jason, you know, don't have Beth Martins on because she's talking about stuff that we're not, you know, that conflicts with our agenda. So they don't, you know, this is information for the people, by the people, and of the people. It's the democratization of news is really what I'm trying to do, not just change the information that we're sharing with people, but the entire business model for how it gets created.
Amen, and spoken like a true king hero. So God bless you, Jason. I know your time has come to a close. I'm going to stay on for a few minutes with people in the chat here. If you'd like to continue to interact a little bit, then God bless you. I love you. And
thank you so much.
To seeing you again on Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern time, correct?
Yes. And thank you so much for the invitation, Beth. I'm sorry I won't be able to stay in the chat, and I'm sorry to cut our conversation short here. We'll definitely do another one. I've got to go because Charles Ortel has surprised me with an amazing booking of two guests who will join us at 4 p.m. Diamond and Silk are going to be on. So when people are done interacting with you in the chat, they can come. It won't be on the Jason Goodman channel, unfortunately. People can see it live on Crowdsource the Truth 2 on YouTube, or on patreon.com/crowdsourcethetruth and subscribestar.com/crowdsourcethetruth. So thank you for this opportunity, Beth, and I look forward to speaking to you again.
My pleasure. Absolutely.
Bye. Take care.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All righty. That was awesome. Thanks, Don, for posting Jason's second channel. And thank you, Holly. I really appreciate that. His time was so short, I didn't have a chance to read people's comments, but I get to now. And Jason's connected with New York. Flat Earth, tough to broker, said Sunset Lights 100. Jason's connected with business. Yeah, I'm just getting to know him myself. And thank you, Blue Pill. I do have good taste in guests. Thank you. I feel so, so fortunate to be connected. Honestly, it's fairly selfish, because every time I meet a strong king hero out like that, that's doing his good in the world, I have more hope for the world. I feel more, less, you know, freaked out. And so then that's the way it goes. Hello, Globebusters. So great that you could make it. I almost burst out into snorting laughter when you said something. What was it? I can't remember. I'll have to go back. Power of Bearing Witness. Yes, Benjamin, absolutely. Flat Accord Music. Hello, Dr. Coleman quit YouTube today. I don't know who that is. I'm not sure how I feel about it. Thoughtful videos. So I'm not familiar. I don't know that. What's happening there? Let's see. Just looking for that funny comment. Globusters. What was it? What was it? Well, he said this. It's funny how we just about got into Flat Earth, eh? I just knew Jason's time was so short. It wasn't the day to even get his two cents on, but maybe he might agree to be flat smacked at some point. Yeah. Globusters asked Jason about Flat Earth, and he's unfamiliar, I think, but wisely backed off to keep the flow. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There will be a time. Yes, there will be time. It's a beautiful thing. It's something that's really changed my life. So, you know, hook up generators in the river power and get free power. Good on you. We all need to be thinking like that right now. Hello, Steve Mercer. I'm glad you are here or were here. That's so good. And a large river in the backyard. We all need one of those. Oh my gosh. Congratulations on your move, Bob. That's super exciting. It looks beautiful. Anyway, so I did want to make sure I tell you that today is the day for my Hero's Journey webinar. And tonight, hello, Beth. Hello, David. Hello, Beth. God. So at 7 p.m. Central Time, I am hosting a free webinar. It is about the Hero's Journey as a path to the self-worth that people do not have. It is something that we have been vehemently programmed with, feeling unworthy. And you'll discover why feeling worthy and unworthy are actually the same programming. And, Jason was saying, thank you. Of course, Jason, that was lovely. Really good. So if you would like to join, the link is there below in the notes. You can just have a quick look at my notes, or you can also just sign up with your email. You'll get all the details to the Zoom call, and we're going to jump on there at 7 p.m. So the Hero's Journey, it's something, if you're not familiar with it, you're going to learn all about it and definitely why it is a path. Oh, yes, Globusters, it was the prostitute comment. I can't find it, though, darn. It's a little too buried. It won't let me go back far enough. But yeah, the Hero's Journey, it's we're all more or less on it. You're on it in one of two ways. You have either accepted your calling, like the King Heroes have. And Bob, actually, I would love to host you for a King Heroes Journey podcast. It's taken me too long to even ask you for that. So if you're open to it, let me know. Send me a message or just say yes in the chat right now. No pressure. Just kidding. And so you can either accept your calling, such as Bob is doing, or you can reject it, and both are pre-writ. It is hardwired. Both are pre-writ. It's one of those things that you're on the hero's journey, whether you decide or not. And that was it. Okay, we got it now. Bob said, here we go. The official comment. He wanted a job as a high-priced male prostitute for supermodels. Well, wish you luck with that. I have a feeling you're really onto your sacred purpose right now, but you know, you never know what purpose is going to drive you to do. It's going to ask you the outrageous thing. It's going to tell you to do crazy stuff. And other people are probably going to look at you and call you crazy for doing it. But because it's between you and your sacred purpose, you and God, you and your soul, then you must do it, because otherwise you can't be at one with yourself. And that is the most important thing. If you have internal integrity, you have energy, you can do the things that take extraordinary energy and courage, as we were just talking to with Jason about, you know, so this is a chance for you to be really inside the pocket of your purpose so that you can be of service to everyone right now. And thank you, Lily Lynn. I'm looking forward to seeing you there if you are coming. And it will be recorded. But if you can make it live, everybody who's coming live on that webinar is going to get a copy of an audio that is helping you deprogram that worthy, unworthy program. So I have specific techniques that help you to actually let this shit go, not just think about it or talk about it or want to, be in a different place. It's, you can't just rearrange furniture on the Titanic. The Titanic is going down. You need to actually make a change. You need to transform. That's the alchemist archetype, of which it, is that is part of that hero's journey. So then that's at 7 o'clock tonight. You can click that link and you can get instant access to the Zoom details. Anything else I want to tell you? I believe I am interviewing tomorrow at noon, and I might have just got the message right now. I'm just going to look at it. Aaron Beatty, who is in California right now. And yep, he just confirmed. So 12 p.m. is going to be the time we're connecting here. He has been through a hero's journey. He has traveled thousands of miles to get to the Balderson place in California. And he's been helping them to set that place up for a gathering in October, which I hope you can go to. Yes, I did post the link to the webinar. Thank you for asking, Sue. It is in the notes below, but let me grab it again. I appreciate the question. That helps me to remember. Here we go. So there's the details and a sign up box here. So this is, I'll just make a note. It was a little scary having Jason on because he is such an incredible technician, among, of course, every other thing that he's doing, but he has a really hot platform. It's super good. So here is the link in the chat if you wanted to see it, and we'll take the wanting to be a prostitute comment down. There you go. And you signed up. That's awesome, little love. I'm so glad. I'm so glad. Oh, Snake Jones is here. So I'm going to be on with Snake Jones tomorrow, 12 noon Central Time, and we'll talk about his hero's journey, what he's been up to. He's still on it. Boy, there's a whole lot going on. Snake, if you're around for a couple of minutes, I need to talk to you, holding my head a little bit. So I would love that. And yeah, I cannot wait for tonight. It's going to be a fun one with people coming from all corners of the earth. I tell you, that's a huge privilege and pleasure of mine. I know you guys know it who are connected on the internet, that we can connect like this internationally. It never was possible, right? I would have never dreamed that we could do this. And here we are making magic. So it's a good thing. Anything you guys want to talk about before I sign off and start getting ready for that? Thank you, Dawn. Thanks for posting the links earlier. That helps a lot. I'm like a one-armed paper hanger. It's all I can do sometimes to just hang on and hear my speaker. And sorry for that ding. I cannot turn that ding off. It's probably going to keep dinging. I'll just let them know that I'm on a stream. I'm on a stream. I can't stop. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. Sorry, guys. The ding. I can't stop the ding. I could change that ding into something. And thank you, Gypsy Road. I appreciate that. I was on Gypsy Road show, and boy, that was so much fun. I completely enjoyed it. Thank you for coming on right now and connecting. Go to their channel, subscribe, and look for the interview that they did with me. It was so fun. They're, you know, to me, the most important thing, and for sure the sign of the King Heroes, are the authenticity, the willingness to just be yourself. That is the thing that is a beacon to those who need to hear what you have to say in the way that you have it, right? At Gypsy Road, you guys have such unique backgrounds. You have unique life experiences. You're coming from a place that your people need to see through your eyes and hear the words that you're saying. Like we were saying, you know, people can say the same thing and it doesn't land. They need to hear it from you. So God bless you for creating your platform. It was super fun. And right on the episode's called It's a Small World. So do join their channel. If you're not familiar with DITRH, Deep Inside the Rabbit Hole, do go and subscribe to that. Flat Accord Music, you should subscribe to his channel. Anybody else want to? Rose 777 backup channel. Darn it, she got a strike, a copyright strike, and it really sucks. So they were streaming the Poppycock Report on the Unintended Consequences, Baldini's channel. So just in case you don't know how to find the Tuesday, Thursday shows, there they are. They're highly recommended. And that's great. Snake Jones, you're off the mountain. So I will ping you as soon as we're done here. Alrighty. Well, I love you guys a lot. I hope you can come tonight and flat chord music. That's funny as a king. Okay. I probably don't know something, so I'm just going to shut up there. And let's see, Globusters, absolutely go and subscribe to their channel and check out their good work. Anybody else here? Snake Jones has a great channel. He's uploading so much right now from his trip and the journey that he's on, so that you're going to hear more about at noon tomorrow. And again, Little Love, thank you for signing up. That's lovely. You know, I really do feel like our moments on YouTube are numbered. Facebook just promised October 1st. Now we're going to be getting more censorship than ever. And so if you can come and connect with me at my website, thank you, Globusters, for that. Then that's a way to stay connected. So you can do an archetype quiz to sign up to stay connected. You could also attend this webinar today. Just send me a message, anything, just to be in contact at BethMartins.com. That's going on the ticker below. All righty. Well, I love you guys a lot. And unless there's anything new down here, David Wolf, you have a great day yourself. And yeah, you do have a channel, Snake Jones. Everybody go there and subscribe. He also has a Patreon, which I am a member of, and there's so much content coming out. I totally can't even keep up with it, but I'm going to get caught up for tomorrow. Okay, well, I think I've gone to quit several times today. Have a beautiful rest of your day and your afternoon. I love you. Bye for now.